Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maradona, Maradona!
Met de balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal. Heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp.
Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp.
Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp. Die neemt de bal feilloos aan. En die schiet de bal erin.
About, maybe like where you're from. What club football team you support, that kind of thing?
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah, firstly, thanks for having me. I think it's a really cool concept that you guys have got going, and so I'm pleased to join you. My name's Vince. I, as you will hear by my accent, I was born in Australia, born and raised in Australia, but with Dutch background. And I mean, my Dutch identity and football go hand in hand, because I remember when I was a young boy living in the Netherlands, my family had moved to the Netherlands for a period of time, and it was 2000, you know, and the European Championship was being held in the Netherlands and Belgium. And I just remember, you know, this was my first real experience with football, and the excitement of the tournament. And that, so those matches were some of my earliest football memories that I can really recollect. And so I carried that with me when I went back to Australia, and then started sort of following the Dutch national team, you know, here and there, just recognizing players like Edgar Davids, Dennis Bergkamp, these kinds of guys. So that's sort of my history with the Dutch national team, or maybe the start of it. In club land, I support Sydney FC back in the Australian league. And in the Netherlands, AZ, you know, always coming third or fourth.
the Dutch.
But I think a great development club that really punches above its weight. So yeah, that's a short introduction to me.
Mm-hmm. And do you have like a favorite memory of maybe watching the Netherlands, like maybe a game from the past that like really sticks out?
Yeah,
it's grabbing you.
It's the one that came to me, and maybe it's because of your headline, you know, the scoreless thriller, was actually Euro 2000, Italy versus the Netherlands.
Oh, the two penalty misses.
Yep, exactly. You know, Toldo, you know, saving the first from, I think, De Boer, and then Patrick Kluivert hitting the woodwork. Then But the real like memory for me in that match was Yap Stam's penalty in the penalty shootout, you know, just going like going to the moon, because my brother, my older brother and I, we thought, obviously we were supporting the Netherlands, but we still just thought it was so funny that this guy had missed, you know, missed the penalty so badly. So that's something that is maybe slightly controversial. That's a big memory for me, but
it was almost painful to make the Netherlands do the penalty shootout after missing two penalties during the game.
Look, I think it was one of those matches, you know,
had
real
some training
like
during the match.
Yeah, preparation.
But the outcome is like predetermined.
I think really by the time it came to penalties, it was a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, morale was down.
Mentally broken. Exactly, but I mean, as a Dutch supporter, or a supporter of the Dutch men's national team, you learn to sort of not get too hopeful. But I mean, or at least in my lifetime, I've never experienced, you know, success or in terms of silverware with the Dutch men's national team. But the 2014 World Cup in Brazil was great to watch along. And I remember, I think it was the quarterfinal against Mexico, and Huntelaar, Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, scores the winning penalty late on after
a slightly dodgy Robin
yes, yes.
ball in the corner of the box.
What is it? No era penal or something like this.
Yeah.
But I remember celebrating, you know, it's the middle of the night, celebrating back in Australia and jumping up and down. And there was a photo actually similar to, you know, like behind me, and I've hit that, or I don't know what's happened, but at some point I turned around and looked at this painting. Yeah. It was my mother's painting. Mm-hmm. And it's got a big glass crack in it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's not good, but hey, look, we're one round further, and that was a really good memory for me following the Oranje.
Yeah, those moments are the best though, right? When it's just sheer ecstasy and you don't care what happens.
Absolutely.
I remember when we watched the Germany-Brazil match, we were watching it at my place on the couch, and because I'm from Germany.
We're talking 2014,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
And then everyone was just jumping up and down on the couch after all the goals, and at one point it just broke, like, right in the middle.
And we just couch had enough.
Just very low, but no one cared one bit, because it was just sheer ecstasy.
Oh my god, wow.
Couch was like, I can handle six goals.
That's a really nice memory. Yeah. And yeah, that's you know, like, football should be in a stadium, and fans should be in the stadium. I think this is maybe a wider topic. Yeah. Especially with the whole corona thing, but just those sort of happenings where your energy is a bit too wild. That's the thing that reminds me of when I'm in the football stadium, just grabbing that random person next to you when a goal goes in, or just, yeah, that utter ecstasy is just what football's about for me in a sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talking about like this summer, after not qualifying for like the last two tournaments, like in the World Cup in 18 and then the Euros in 16, like, what is the kind of realistic expectation for the Netherlands this summer, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and yeah, you phrase it perfectly, because yeah, missing last two major tournaments, it's hard to really know where the team is at in terms of there's a lack of experience or tournament hardened experience. I think, you know, I was looking at the squad list the other day, and you know, maybe five or six players have played in what, that World Cup in 2014. So it's a very unknown. I think realistically, maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this, but you know, a quarterfinal is realistically, you know, that's a good performance. I think a semifinal is very, you know, I'd be very happy with that, and let's see. But it's a tournament, hey, you know, form goes out the window. Friendlies beforehand, it's hard, it's not a science, you know. So let's see what happens. I mean, the group, you look at the group that the Netherlands have been in with Austria and Ukraine and North Macedonia, you know, from the outside you say, okay, the Netherlands are the clear favorite of the group, but yeah. you don't want us to underestimate those sides or any opponent. You just have to, I think you have to focus on yourself, of course, with respect to your opponent. I think it was Cruyff who said, Johan Cruyff who said, you know, you control, you know, we don't worry about the other team, we control what we do. And so I think that's important for the Dutch national team to do this time.
But surely that's easier to say in that group than in the group F, where Germany's in, and you've got French, France and Spain, and Portugal.
Yeah, look, I think that for me, I wouldn't want to be in that group if I was one of those teams. But then at the same time, is it not great? Well, if you want to win, you're in it to win.
Oh, I agree.
You know? Yeah. And if you're one of these teams, and let's beat these teams in the group stages. Like I remember 2008, the Netherlands was paired with Romania, Italy, and France, and destroyed Italy and France particularly. And those are some of bloody fantastic, fantastic games. And unfortunately, the Dutch went out in the next round, I think, to Russia.
So let's
see what happens. I hope they win, you know, 9 points. And I think then, you know, we'll see if they reach the round of 16, 9 points, you know, the belief will in the country and in myself will just go we'll just go vertically straight up. So, yeah, exactly.
Jose Mourinho once described Frank de Boer as the worst manager in Premier League history. Has he done much because his record since he took over for Ronald Koeman has been a bit mixed. Do you think he's kind of done enough to sort of turn that around, that perception of him?
Look, I think he'll be judged heavily on what the team achieves in this tournament, and I think that'll be results based. As we said earlier, you know, missing two tournaments, there's no record to show. I don't think he's the worst English Premier League manager in history. That's another debate. But he'll be judged on what he does this tournament. The recent results are patchy. When I looked through last time they lost was away in Istanbul, and that's a tough place to go. A recent draw, you know, a couple of days ago against Scotland, sure, not great, but look, let's look at the end goal, and leading into a a friendly before a tournament. It's not about the result, you know. No one's going to remember if they drew 2-2 with Scotland if they win the cup.
It's just about getting match fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting match fit. And fitting together. He actually made a really good call the other day. Jesper Cillessen, goalkeeper, potentially our number one at this tournament, contracted COVID. And he said, okay, I had to make a tough call. Do I keep him in the squad, isolate him and see how he is if he's fit? He just said, okay, it's an emotional decision and it's really terrible for Cillessen. But he cut him from the squad and he's brought in Bizot, the goalkeeper for AZ, so that's fine. I think he's ready. I think it's now or never, so good luck to him.
Yeah.
If the Netherlands are to have a good tournament, who do you think will be someone who's going to like drive the team for? Like, who is going to be like the key players for in their success?
I mean, you have to say Wijnaldum, of course, stepping up as I think as captain now. I would really like to see Memphis Depay as well. You know, World Cup 2015, he was one of the best young players. And I think, you know, this is a chance for him to stake a claim for himself. And also in the back line, Matthijs de Ligt, you know, 21 years old, 20 odd caps. You know, he's a captain in waiting, and I think he has to really step up and lead the back line. So, and one more, I think that I would like to be pleasantly surprised by is Van de Beek. You know, he sat for about half the season on the bench, or just got a lot of substitute appearances for United, and for his sake at least, I would love it if, you know, he pops up with a couple of goals, has some good performances, because I know there were a lot of people criticising his inclusion in the squad. So, you know, I think he's someone that could, on his day, can be really good.
Mm-hmm. I have one final question that we've been asking everyone for all our countries, and it's, if you were to go for a beer with a player past or present from the Netherlands, who would it be?
Can I say past and I'd probably have to form a five-a-side team, really. It's tough to make one.
Nice up with the lads.
No, let's say Ruud van Nistelrooy. I just thought he was an unbelievable player, and his record isn't as high as it should be. He should have played more games for the Dutch national team, but I guess there was history there with Van Basten. He spoke at, what was it, Oxford University? It was like a YouTube video, and he's a really good speaker. And present, I would probably say again Matthijs de Ligt. I'm a centre back myself, and I think I would love to pick his brain. And I think he seems, you know, any guy that can play centre back for Ajax, lead them to a semi final, and Juventus now, like, he's got to be all right. So Van Nistelrooy, past, De Ligt, right now.
Yeah, so two good choices. Also, like, how you're taking this beer as an opportunity to, like, improve. You're not, like, looking for, like, a good night out. It's like, I want to get, to get the beer canisters out.
Show some tactics.
look, my time, you know, my chance. There was a time where I thought, well, maybe that was my dream, you know. At like every person's dream to play a professional sport, but I can still always improve, just if it's just the park football as well. So, thanks.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Evening. All the best with your project. Take care.
So our next guest runs the Macedonian football footy account on Twitter, and we're going to be discussing Macedonia. Alexander, do you want to give a little bit of an introduction to yourself?
Yeah, well, my name is Alexander Zlotevsky. I was born in Macedonia, and when I was 11, my family immigrated to the United States, but I remain a football fan, and even now in the United States, I still follow football, and I'm the manager of the Macedonia footy account. I'm excited to be on your show.
Yeah, so for this Euros, Macedonia are, along with Finland, like those two countries making their debut at this tournament, of Macedonia and Finland, like I said. And for a lot of people, they won't really know much about the Macedonian football or like the football team. What has been kind of like the journey in the last couple of years, which has allowed them to compete at this tournament?
It's been a wild journey. I mean, like you said, we didn't qualify via the traditional route. We qualified via the Nations League. So what happened was when UEFA created the Nations League, we were in League D, which is the bottom tier. But the way the system worked is one League D team was guaranteed to be in the Euro 2020. And why not us? So basically, that was the goal from the coaches to the players. Let's capitalize on being in League D of the Nations League and try to be that one team in League D that gets to Euro. So basically, we won our League D group in the Nations League. Then we got to the playoffs. We had to play Kosovo in the semifinals. We won that game 2-1. And then in the final, we played Georgia and we won that game 1-0. So it's been a crazy journey, but I think the players deserve it. They've really improved over the past couple of years. They've also been more competitive against quality sides. Recently, we beat Germany. So this is not a fluke. I think this team deserves to be at Euro 2020, and I think they'll be a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, you mentioned the win over Germany. I'm curious about like how that was kind of received, because I think that was the result that people all around Europe like took notice of, like, well, wow, like we've talked about whenever somebody plays Macedonia, it's not a question of how much, it's not a question of whether you beat them, it's how much you beat them by. But like this result really made people sort of take notice of Macedonian football.
Well, I think everybody was kind of shocked by the win. I mean, I don't think anybody expected it, but basically the players approached that game with like no pressure. Okay, we go into Germany, we play on the road, everybody expects a loss. Let's just go out there and do our best and see what happens. I think Germany, looking at that game, I think kind of probably underestimated us. They're thinking, oh, we can just show up and win. And it doesn't work that way. So ultimately, if you watch that game, I mean, that win was deserving. It wasn't a fluky win. It wasn't like a smash and grab. It was a deserving win. We had a couple of calls that didn't go our way with the referee. Like there was a clear penalty that should have been called on a Chan handball. That wasn't called. Germany got a fluky penalty on the other end. So I mean, that was a game where if you watch it, I'm like, I was very impressed with how they played, and that was a fully deserved victory. So I think that win happening just before Euro 2020 is a huge plus, because it's going to give the players confidence. And you know what? If you can beat Germany on the road, you can play with anybody. So in this group, having the Netherlands, Ukraine, and Austria, I think if you can beat Germany, you can certainly play with those three teams in the group.
And is that also the takeaway points for most of the fans in Macedonia? Do they now think, okay, we beat Germany, so, you know, who else can stop us now?
Well, the thing about this team is, even in the past, like, the problem with the team was always mentality. Like, we would always get up to play big sides, but we would always kind of just not take a bad side seriously. I mean, if you look at the results in the past, I mean, this team has drawn against England. This team has drawn against the Netherlands multiple times. This team has drawn against Portugal, Belgium. This team drew against Italy. So they've always been capable of pulling off a shock result against the big sides, but then they would lose to Andorra, or they would lose to these minnows that they have no business losing to. So the mentality was always bad, and I think that's been the biggest takeaway over the past couple of years. The mentality has improved. They beat the sides they're supposed to, and they always kind of play the big side stuff. So ultimately, I think the reaction in our country has been one, that, you know what, the players are finally, you know, showing professionalism. They're taking every game seriously, and they're beating the teams they're supposed to, and then doing their best when they play better sides.
Yeah. Do you know what was at the core of this shift in mentality? What inspired this?
I think the biggest thing was in 2017, the under 21 generation qualified for the under 21 Euros. And they came first in a group that included France and Ukraine. And France was loaded back then. I mean, you can just look at that under 21. You can just look at that under 21 squad from France in 2017. And this team, our team at that time, came in first in that group to qualify. So I think after that tournament in 2017, you had 7 or 8 of those under 21 players get promoted. And they brought in a lot of youthful energy, and they also brought in a winning mentality and some fighting spirit. And that was needed. So I think the biggest kind of, you can say, the biggest thing that kind of shifted everything in a positive direction was those young guys coming in. They're kind of naive. They don't know any better. And they brought in that fighting spirit. And I think that was probably the biggest key to the turnaround.
Who are some of the players for people who won't know much about the Macedonian team? Obviously, they recognize Pandev and Arioski at Leeds. But who are some of the other players who that, you know, people may not know so much about and who might actually like surprise people?
I would single out Eli Filmas, midfielder from Napoli. He's somebody who loves the big stage, and he's very talented. I mean, he doesn't take a backseat to anybody when it comes to talent. I think Eli Filmas is primed to have a huge tournament. Enis Bardi is a very solid midfielder as well. I think people that watch La Liga know him. He's a phenomenal free kick taker, but he's also more than that. He's not just a specialist with free kicks. He's also a very good open field player as well. So Eli Filmas, Enis Bardi. Then you look at another midfielder, Arjan Ademi. He plays in Croatia with Dinamo Zagreb. This year, Dinamo Zagreb had a great run in the Europa League. I think they reached the quarterfinals, and he was the captain. I mean, he was a big part of that. So I would say those three midfielders, Ilmaz, Bardi, Ademi. And then in the defense, I would keep an eye on the two center backs, Velkovski and Muslihu. I think both of those guys have eyes on making big transfers after Euro 20, and I think they're going to really have a good showing as well.
And with this young and impressive team setup, what do you think is a realistic goal for the team at the Euros?
Well, again, I think the group is not that bad. I mean, I think most people say, oh, you guys are outsiders, you will lose every game. And I don't think that's frankly fair. I think when you look at this group, you got Austria, Ukraine, and the Netherlands. I mean, there's no reason to fear Austria. There's no reason to fear Ukraine. I think a realistic, ambitious goal should be, you know what, let's get to the round of 16. That should be the goal.
Because so, with three teams going through, like, it does make it very open for the ones below the top.
Yeah, because like you said, there's 24 teams in Euro 2020. Out of those 24, 16 will go on to the round of 16. That means 4 third place finishers from the 6 groups will also advance. You know what? You get one win. I think 3 points may be enough to get you to the round of 16. So why not try to target a win against Austria or Ukraine? There's no reason to fear them. I mean, there's no reason you can't get a result against those sides. It's not like you're in... Like, Hungary has an impossible task because they got Portugal, they got Germany. To me, that's unrealistic for Hungary. But I think Austria and Ukraine, absolutely, you can beat Austria or Ukraine. And then Netherlands, I mean, yeah, they're a big side, but then they're not the same with Frank de Boer, who's a terrible manager. So why not surprise them if possible? I mean, and plus, the way the schedule sets up, Netherlands is the third team you play. So at that point, Netherlands could have everything wrapped up, so they may have nothing to play for. So I think the schedule, the way it's set up, it's also very positive as well. You got Austria first, then Ukraine, and then Netherlands. So,
do you?
Yeah, I think.
No, sorry. Go ahead, Alex. Yeah.
No, I just think like targeting that first game against Austria will really like tell a lot about what's kind of achievable for North Macedonia. Because if they win that game or get a draw, then like everything is open for them, right?
Yeah, in Austria, I mean, if you look at Austria's history, they typically do not do well in big tournaments. Austria, I think, mm-hmm. is a very talented team. We had them in Euro 2020 qualifying, so we know them and they know us. But so they have a lot of talent. I mean, Alaba, Arnautovic, they have plenty of talent. But one thing about Austria, if you look at their track record, is they typically do very poorly on the big stage. They do very badly in Euros. And so I think Austria is certainly gettable. I really do.
Do you already know where you're going to watch the matches? Is there any particular spot, some friends, some bars? What's the plan?
Well, I'll watch it at home because, you know, when I'm watching, I'm also on the Twitter account. I do minute-by-minute analysis. So in that way, it's better just to watch it on TV and then also provide minute-by-minute analysis. So that's my go-to when I watch these games. I watch it on TV and then I have my laptop in front of me and then I'm typing as well.
Mm-hmm. What game has been the absolute highlight of you watching the Macedonian? Would it have been the Germany game, or was it does the Georgia qualifying game take precedence over that?
I would take, based on significance, the Georgia win, because I mean Germany, that was a great win, and of course people were shocked, and I mean I was surprised too. I didn't expect us to win. I thought we would play well, but the Georgia win, in terms of significance, winning that game and reaching Euro 2020, I don't think you can beat that. So I would say the highlight has been that playoff final against Georgia in Tbilisi when we won 1-0 and Pandev ended up scoring the winning goal. So that was kind of like a fairy tale in terms of, you can't write it. I mean, it's just Pandev scoring the game winner to send his country at Euro 2020 at age 38. And he's thinking about retiring potentially after Euro 2020. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's fairy tale stuff. We have one final, slightly lighter question that we're asking everyone. And it's, if it was able to go for a beer or a coffee with a member of the Macedonian team, past or present, who would you choose?
Oh, I think it's easy. It would be Alioski. He's crazy, but in a good way. And I think fans of Leeds United can kind of tell you Johnny Kim. I mean, the guy is crazy, but I mean, he's reliable. I mean, you can think of him and you can look at his antics and think this guy is wild and crazy, but you know what? He's very reliable. He's always available. The teammates love him, but he's somebody who likes to have fun. So if I can have one player on the team to have a coffee or beer with, it would be Alioski.
All right, brilliant. Great answer. Thank you so much for joining us here for this.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you guys for having me. You guys
have
a good one.
Yeah, this was great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, take care, man.
Yep, take care.
I'm sure Alex already has told you, this is just a very, very casual chat about the teams at the Euros and kind of the teams that you support. And for us, it would be very interesting if you could talk a little bit about yourself at the beginning, kind of where you're from specifically in Austria, and maybe what kind of local teams you support, any kind in that direction.
Okay, so basically, I'm from Vienna, but my parents are Turkish, so I was born there, so I'm Austrian. Identify more as Austrian than Turkish. So basically, football is in both countries a big deal, the most popular sport. And I was like, when I was a child, I was a fan of Rapid Vienna. But I kind of stopped supporting or watching the Austrian league because it is not as exciting, and it seems like Sunday football somehow. Yeah, so I basically like started watching more the like major football leagues, like the Premier League. So I'm a Liverpool fan, and then some Italian league, like because due to the closeness to Austria, so it like seems like the natural league to watch as well, because we can watch some Italian TV. Operators. So, and yeah, that's basically it. So, but I have been going to like watching games and so on. It's like a activity with friends you do, and then you like buy some fries and Frankfurter and just, and we have like, I think a lot of people support, like watch football in Austria. So me and my friends, we used to go to a lot of pubs. and watch Champions League, UEFA League. And like my friends are crazy about the German league mostly. So we like watch pretty much everything and spend a really nice day in pub.
Even though all the Germans complain that the German league is so boring by now, with Munich winning every title since forever. But so you said that you are also going to the stadiums to watch it live. Have you also been to one of the Austria matches in the past?
Yes, I think I have been. I can't remember because it has been in my youth. So.
Okay.
But it's basically, I've been also doing a lot of public viewing because we have had the Euro in 2008, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And there we went to a lot of public viewing. So it's basically also watching football.
Yeah. And do you have any special memories from the time watching at public viewing? Any incidents that happened? Any specific matches where you were cheering them on?
So basically, Austria was kind of disappointing to be the host and not going more than the group stage. So at some point, I started turning into supporting Turkey. Yeah. Like, I think that a lot of immigrants, well, they do the same in Austria. You know, we like, if Austria wins, we're like happy, but if our like family's country is against Austria, I'm usually one like the better side should win, it's okay, but it kind of ends up with Austria losing. So I do remember that it was like a match, Turkey versus Croatia. So we have a lot of Croatians and Turkish people in Austria. And it was like a drama. And it was Turkey scored in overtime and won. And Turkish people were just screaming. And Croatian hooligans were banging their heads against some walls because they were totally crazy. So this is one of my best memories actually from that. So, because you can't really expect much from Austria, even though I don't think we have a bad team. I think we have quite some good players who go and play abroad, in Italy or in the UK. But they, as a team, they just don't seem to click.
What would you do if Austria was playing Turkey later on in the tournament? How would you decide?
I mean, I don't have a Turkish flag in my apartment. I have a big Austrian flag.
So that settles it.
Okay, so yeah. That decides it. Yeah. But how well do you think Austria will do in this tournament? Because it's, you know, it's like a long time since they won a match in a major tournament, but...
Actually, it is I think we have they say we have a weird fear because we embarrassed ourselves the last time with even losing against the Faroese Islands for 9-0 or something like this. There's something I don't know if it was the Euros or the World Cup, but I try to forget about this.
Yeah.
We basically lost against amateur players. So I think there's kind of a spell where we think, oh, we are not going to do well, and people are afraid. But I've seen that the first games we had for the qualification, they were actually bad. But somehow we turned it around at some point, and we haven't been too bad. So, and we played against Northern Macedonia in the qualifiers. So I think this is a team we can beat. And Ukraine, I don't think that they're so strong. They have more individual good players. So the Netherlands, we're not going to be able to beat. I guess it's going to be between second and third place. But I would be super disappointed if it was the
third place. And it would be a big thing, right? If you were to get second place or even third place, and then through the mechanics end up in the final stages of the tournament, that would be a big step for Austria, right? Because they've never managed to get promoted out of the group stages.
Yeah, so it is very important, and I'm like confident in the team actually. Yeah.
How's the public on the media kind of the coverage on the team? Are they kind of getting in the spirit and cheering them on, or are they a bit more skeptical based on the record that the team has had in the past?
I think they're always skeptical. I mean, I read up something yesterday because I was like, I have even forgotten who's in our group because of Corona. Like, I didn't even think it would happen.
Yeah.
So when I looked up, I saw that people even wanted us to withdraw from the tournament we held in our own country. So I think it is like very skeptical. And it's also, there is generally a fear that we are going to lose against big teams like the Netherlands. Yeah. So, but I mean, there is some hope. Like everyone is like, there's also like in Austria, I think that supporting football also goes hand in hand a little bit with nationalism. So the more nationalistic fans are, of course, going to be behind Austria no matter what. But like from a non-nationalistic perspective, I think that it is time for us to step up our game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have the final question that we've been asking everyone is if they could pick a player past or present from the national team to go for a drink with, who would they pick? Who would you pick for Austria?
Oh, I would definitely pick Arnautovic.
Yeah.
I think he's a bit of a crazy child.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's like I would just like to ask him why he hasn't put a lot of effort into becoming a like bigger player to go to bigger clubs, because like what we think about him is that he has a lack of self-discipline.
Yeah,
he's also not quite the most popular in terms of he's too arrogant.
Okay.
So I would love to like hang out with him for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, sounds good. So best of luck for the Austrian team anyways. Let's hope that they'll make it to the group stages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we need some goals. I hope I'm not
too sure. I want them to get their win at least. Yeah.
All right.
He scores all the goals now.
All right. Have a lovely evening.
Thank you so much for joining us. Maybe briefly introduce yourself, like how, maybe like where you're from or how long you've been covering the Ukrainian national team and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Andrew Todos. I've been following Ukrainian football since I was 4 years old. My first match ever was England versus Ukraine at the old Wembley Stadium, one of the last games there. And then I properly got more stuck into it and I got a bit older as at the 2006 World Cup, Ukraine's first tournament. And then, you know, I was casually supporting them, went to games, went to away days, that sort of thing, dressed up as like a Cossack, went to Euro 2016. The embarrassment of a tournament that it was for Ukraine. And then after university finished, in 2018, I set up my page that I run now, Zori Londonsk, because there wasn't really that much English language material on Ukrainian football. And as I followed it for myself anyway, I thought, why not share that with the masses?
Yeah, cool. What has been some of the like highlights? Like, what have been the games that you've covered or watched that have been like for Ukrainian football have been the highlights?
Euro 2016 that I mentioned was definitely the low light, so it can't get much worse than that. Zero points and zero goals from three games, but
zero goals.
But
Jordan, what happened to Ukraine in 2016? Because obviously, like they lost to Northern Ireland, Poland, and Germany. But you know, before that, had they thought that you know they would have a good tournament, or like what was the story there?
I mean, I don't think there was that bad of expectations going into that tournament, really. I think, you know, they thought they might do well, especially against Northern Ireland, and maybe give it out with Poland. And because, you know, at the Euros now, three teams qualify potentially from a group, there were expectations that something would happen there. But, you know, that ended. Shevchenko became the manager, from legendary player to potentially legendary manager, depending what he pulls off this summer. But yeah, I guess the highlights that I've seen so far, because since I've been covering on 2018, it's actually been one of the most positive trajectories of Ukrainian national team in like their 30-year history. So good timing. And it all started with the Nations League in 2018, the debut tournament. They won their sort of League B group. I went to a game in Czech Republic there, which was a really good atmosphere. There was like about 5,000 traveling fans in like a tiny little 10K stadium. And there was like loads of pyro, people like just topless. And then at the very end, it got a bit ugly with like the riot police and stuff. Started beating up a few of Ukrainian ultras. I claim
were
that
you
I got...
in, were you in there with them, or were you just covering a sort of press in the
I know at that point I wasn't like properly press covering. I was more like from the fan point of view. So yeah, this was back in the sort of days when I was getting involved in that sort of stuff. And no, because we had When I was obviously in the stands, I used to travel. We used to do at least sort of one away game a year or something like that with a big group of us from the UK. Because I'm born in London and lived here all my life, but I'm got Ukrainian heritage, hence the connection as to why I follow the sport. And yeah, that was quite, you know, lively, bit of atmosphere, got the blood pumping. And that was sort of the first match where Ukraine started going up. And then following that, there was the Euro 2020 qualifying campaign, which was probably the highlight, you know, 2019, that highlight year for Ukraine, where they finished the first ever calendar year unbeaten in their history. Was at the Portugal game where they won 2-1 in Kyiv. Historic win where it secured them the top spot for the Euro group, you know, against the current European champions. At the very end of the match, it was like a packed Olimpijski stadium, so 70,000 plus. And then like in the center circle, Ukraine have adopted the Icelandic clap as their own, but like a similar take where in between each sort of gap, it's like Ukraina, and yeah, so all the players were in the center circle doing it, and like it was crazy. But I'd say probably and then the biggest sort of probably the best performance I've seen from Ukraine was a 5-0 battering of Serbia in Lviv, which was sort of unprecedented. No one really expected Ukraine, and that's been regarded as one of the greatest performances in Ukrainian history. Just the way that Ukraine moved the ball forward, sort of the electric atmosphere, it was really good to watch.
People like will know Andriy Shevchenko as this legendary striker, but this is his first job in coaching, so I'm curious, is like, do people predict that he would have this success with the Ukrainian team? Like, what's his style? Like, how has he kind of brought this about?
Well, to answer that first question, no. I think a lot of people, like when he came into the job, were like, what the hell? It doesn't necessarily, you know, it was his first job in coaching. It's quite a prestigious job for the greatest Ukrainian player of all time to just go straight into management and get his first role as, you know, the national team job. And he was also part of the coaching staff during that Euro 2016 qualifying campaign. So everyone sort of knew semi that tournament was sort of partly, I think he was involved in some of the, you know, the decisions on the pitch and that sort of stuff. So, you know, there was skepticism when he first joined. And I mean, the first 2 years weren't too good. World Cup 2018 qualifying was pretty subpar. Ukraine finished third in the end, in a group of like Croatia and Iceland, and Turkey. But it was just there just didn't seem to be much of a plan. But like I was mentioning about the, you know, the Nations League, from there it seemed that this sort of the philosophy that Shevchenko wanted to bring in started to be set in stone with the players that he picked as well. So like all the big players that we sort of know in the team now, you know, Oleksandr Zinchenko, Malinovsky, Yaremchuk, those sort of players, they were introduced during that Nations League campaign, and it's sort of grown as a collective, and they're sort of certain in how they want to play. And basically Shevchenko's philosophy per se is to play sort of on the front foot, attacking football. So they want to play out from the back, you know, progressive build-up play through the park or down the wings. And, you know, they've had quite a lot of success doing that. It sort of got slightly found out during the Nations League A last autumn, when Ukraine played against Spain and they got absolutely battered 4-0. And there was no alternative. Like, it looked like what the hell's going on here? Because Ukraine were like pressed out, and it just looked like, wow, Chev's finally got some coaching to do, sort of thing, to see how to fix. And suddenly, well, to be honest, it got even harder for him, because during that October campaign, like half the squad got that he called up got hit by COVID. So he had to call up some other players. But credit to him and his coaching staff, which is actually made up of a few Italians, Andrea Moldera and Mauro Tassotti, who's got history at AC Milan. They've sort of helped the team build on those mistakes that they've made. And I think it's been actually quite positive that they had this sort of League A experience ahead of the Euros. You know, had the Euros been last year, maybe Ukraine would have gone in cold, despite having the momentum from that 2019 campaign. It could have all just gone awry and unfurled, you know, slightly prematurely at the final tournament. Whereas now I think Ukraine are a lot more prepared.
Like, what is the expectation about what is achievable for Ukraine? Because I'm just thinking, we've spoken to somebody from North Macedonia, and he seemed quite confident about targeting the Ukraine game as something, as where they would get their win.
Yeah, well, Shevchenko's already said himself that the main target is to get out of the group. And that's like the bare minimum. Ukraine have never got out of the group at the Euros. They've been at the Euro 2012, which they obviously hosted, and Euro 2016, which we've already spoken a fair bit about. And they've only won one game out of six matches. So, you know, they need to build on that. They need to score some goals, which will be a positive, which is something they've actually been struggling of late. I think they've only scored more than one goal in two out of their last 12 matches or something like that. So goals are slightly hard to come by, but the chances they create are like unbelievable in terms of the numbers.
Yarmolenko just not putting them in, or what is the issue?
Well, Yarmolenko's not okay. As key as he used to be. In all honesty, he's obviously been injured a fair bit during his time at West Ham. Yarmolenko played his first 90 minutes against Northern Ireland in a friendly, you know, his first 90 minutes in about 4 or 5 months. And he still looked a bit rusty in terms of, you know, finishing in front of goal. And he's obviously lost any bit of pace that he used to have. But I still think he's going to be a key player during the Euros in terms of, he will probably be starting on the right wing and captain the side in the absence that Andriy Pyatov, veteran goalkeeper, has lost his place in the team to the younger and more informed Jorge Buschan. And yeah, the issue with the finishing of chances is that, I don't know, it's just like either the keeper's been saving them or just like the forwards or the midfielders just can't get their shot away properly. It's like it's either going wide or something like that. So hopefully they're just saving all of these, all their energy for the final tournament. And we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. And surely Shevchenko has an idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
How he makes this work, right? I mean, based on his personal career, he should have.
The issue with that, obviously, is that there's probably no one of the same caliber as him in terms of strike rate. Roman Yaremchuk, who is the centre forward, is probably the best striker that Ukraine have had since he retired in 2012. So that's a positive. But yeah, I think Yaremchuk as a forward, he's probably one of those that needs about three chances and, you know, maybe one of those goes in. And, you know, in the big games, you might not be afforded that many attempts. But we'll see. Because Ukraine, I think, over the average of their sort of four or five games that they've played this calendar year, the average sort of amount of goals, like, well, shots on or off target is like 17. So that's pretty big. It just, and they've only scored one goal in each of those matches. So it just needs some sort of, and I've already discussed this sort of on Twitter and stuff like that, and you know, there's a general consensus that at the end of the day, as long as they score one goal and even get a draw, it might be enough to get out of the group, and then the knockout stages just take it to penalties.
The defense is quite strong, right? I was reading they've only conceded four goals in the qualifying campaign.
Yeah, it's a strong, organised defence. However, there is a new 18-year-old centre-back who's sort of had a rise, who's had a meteoric rise over the past 12 months, who will be probably starting at right centre-back alongside the more experienced Mykola Matvienko.
Okay.
But he looks good. He's like one of the young guns to watch, I guess, at this tournament.
What is his name?
Ilya Zabarny.
Okay.
He's Dynamo Kyiv centre-back. He was drafted into the Dynamo Kyiv team at the start of the 2021 season because they had some injuries at centre-back. He got directly promoted from the under-19s, made his senior debut in the Ukrainian Premier League. Then he made his senior debut in the Champions League. And then he made his senior debut in a 7-1 defeat to France in a friendly last October during that COVID period.
Okay.
But he's been a sort of starter in all the big matches for Ukraine and Dynamo Kyiv since. So, you know, a lot's expected from him.
Are you heading to any of the games, Andrew?
Yes, I have got, I'm hoping to head to all three group stage matches.
Oh, that's big.
That should be pretty exciting then. So the first game is against the Netherlands, right? Or?
Yeah. And then we've got North Macedonia and Austria, as the last one, which I probably is the least one I'm looking forward to based on my own chats with some Austrian experts who say that the style seems quite similar to Ukraine's and it's going to be a rather awful match of football, like, probably.
three shots in the whole game.
Yeah, but maybe considering, I mean, the setup of the group, this might be the decisive one, right?
Exactly. Potentially, it could be like a bit of a final shootout for, you know, any space between 1 to 3. Hopefully Ukraine aren't out by then. But I'm quite positive. I'm not going to lie. I've been telling people, well, since because I actually went to see all of that Euro 2020 qualifying campaign. I've seen a fair amount of the matches during the Nations League and League A as well, live. And I don't know, there is something about this, the Ukraine side, of late compared to, you know, years gone by, where there seems to be like a spark in them, like this sort of team collective where it's the sum of all its parts rather than, you know, one talismanic individual like Andriy Shevchenko. Fine, there are some big players littered across the team, but ultimately they all combine together, and hopefully there will be some good football to see and some positive results to match.
Yeah, that sounds great. I gotta say, from both of the portrayals of North Macedonia and Ukraine now, I'm really looking forward to that match, because you put it forward with just confidence that it sounds like it might be a very good one.
We'll see. We couldn't beat Kazakhstan in March, so who knows?
you should have just kept that quiet, maybe. Don't mention it. I have one final question that we've been asking all of our guests, and it's if you could go for a beer with the player, past or present, from Ukraine, who would it be?
Oh, it has to be Andriy Yarmolenko. He's just a great guy. I've had the chance to meet him a couple of times, but obviously quite fleetingly. But yeah, just was my idol growing up as a kid and, well, teen years. And yeah, it just seems pretty switched on as a player and that sort of stuff. Good beer banter. And I think it would be a nice event if they ever popped off.
Okay, that sounds good. Andrew, thank you so much for giving us a bit of an insight into Ukraine. I hope that good tournament for you. I hope you enjoy the games, and I hope Ukraine actually get out of the group stage for the first time.
Thanks very much.
To kick things off, do you want to maybe introduce yourself, like maybe where in Austria you're from, maybe what football team you support, that kind of thing?
Sure. First of all, thanks so much for organizing that. I love the idea of doing such a podcast. And I am from Graz in Austria, which is the second biggest city, and not very famous. Not like usually in Denmark, for example, people know Vienna plus one skiing area. So it's not very common, but it's a student city of 200,000, 300,000 inhabitants. And I studied there as well. I come from there. And right now I'm living in Copenhagen to study. And I'm not a big fan of the Austrian football national team, but I like to watch it, of course.
But doesn't think they're good people.
How come you're not a big fan?
No, there's not much to do with that. It's more like the opposite. I really don't like this patriotic approach when you look some sport and then you're just like, oh, okay, they're my nationality. I have to support them, which is kind of like a reflex that many people do. But yeah. I kind of want to counter that. But still, I enjoy watching.
Do you think, though, it's easier not to fall into that trap when the performances of your nation
are not
the very, very best?
Probably that's as an Austrian, that's easier than as a German after winning the World Cup, for example.
Because I'm not a very patriotic guy, but then whenever I watch football, I do fall into that trap, and I'm very excited for Germany playing. So there's that. Yeah.
I totally get that. I think for me it's the same. Like if Austria would be like super, super successful, which I haven't experienced yet so often, then I probably would be more proud to talk with international people about like, hey, did you see Austria play the other night?
Yeah, exactly. Do you have a highlight though of watching the Austrian team? Maybe like a good memory?
Yeah, totally. So I think so. It has been quite a gap of Austria joining a big tournament like Euros or World Cup, and then in 2008 we kind of found a very smooth solution to play at such a tournament by hosting. Mm-hmm. So we shared it with Switzerland, and then we've been part of it, and it was one shitty performance after the other. But then there was one situation where Austria somehow got a penalty, and then everybody was about to know, okay guys, at the public viewing and everything, and like we are about to score,
ready, yeah.
Like it's so likely. And then Ivica Vastic, who is like a Austrian legend, went to the penalty, and he has like roots, I think, in Croatia or Serbia or something like that. So his German, actually, when you watch his interviews, is not the best. So he's actually not really an Austrian, but he had the permission for playing for the Austrian national team because he played in Austria for such a long time.
Yeah.
And then he took the ball and he scored. And Austria, I think that the game ended 1-1, but we scored one goal in this.
Yeah,
time.
I think the goal, it was like an added time, right? It was like right at the end. So yeah.
The foul was super early. I think it was like in the 87th, but then everything took so long. even without the VAR, you really had the feeling that the whole team was nervous of scoring this goal. And then like Bastic just took it and he was just like, all right, guys, I'm going to do that.
When I was researching Austria for this podcast, I came across this stat, which I think is like, it's kind of crazy. And I'm wondering whether you'll know it. And it's when was the last Austrian win at a major tournament? Like when did they last win a game in a major?
It's far away. Like it has to be before I was born.
Because they didn't win a game at 2008.
No, they did not. They did not. I would assume something like 82.
No, it's actually the 1990 World Cup against the US. So not as far back as that.
But that is far away.
Yeah.
But what do you think about Austria's chances this time? Like, it's an interesting group with the Netherlands, Ukraine, and North Macedonia. I feel like outside of the Netherlands, then it should be like a reasonable, even game for Austria.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I see a little bit of a chance. But then, since Austria does not have the most experienced team, yet a team full of big names in a way, also in the German-speaking area, especially the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
I think the second place in this group would definitely be an option, which would be a great achievement. Everybody's expecting from you to win against
Macedonia. A win would be an achievement, right?
steady horses.
but also having North Macedonia in the group, you need to have at least one win.
Yeah.
And then the Netherlands, you cannot expect much from that game. And then the Ukraine is kind of like a 50-50 chance. I think that we will fuck it up somehow and end up third in the group. But maybe they'll prove me wrong.
Yeah, and maybe the squad being young is also a good thing, right? They might have come in with a new mentality, not the mental baggage of the losses that they've experienced in previous tournaments. So,
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. The only thing is that how Austria plays is not a very like modern way of playing football. It's kind of like we play like you played in 2008, like very static, very organized, but not creative whatsoever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there are some like exciting names that people would know, like Savitzer, Alaba, and Arnautovic, that, you know, people would be exciting. Yeah. If you were to pick like maybe another player who could be quite important for Austria, who would you?
I think like defensively, I would go for maybe Dragovic. He could be like a leader to this young group because he has experience. He now moved to, I think, to Red Star Belgrade, if I'm not wrong. And then Baumgartner, who made a great season for Hoffenheim. Not Baumgartlinger, but Baumgartner. And then high hopes would be on Sascha Kalajdzic from Stuttgart. But I don't see him stepping up yet in a big tournament. So I really hope that Alaba will make a good tournament.
Yeah,
that would be nice to see, especially now switching the clubs. Like as a Real Madrid player, that would be amazing.
Yeah, he's kind of like the key, right? If Austria is to be successful, then he'll have to go through Alaba.
Absolutely. The thing is just like when you talk to like very conservative Austrians, like the 50, 60-year-old guys sitting in like bars talking about football, smoking, then they will always criticize the role of David Alaba in the national team because he's a world-class left-back, but he's not a good central midfielder.
Yeah.
And I totally did.
But wait, can you still smoke in bars in Austria?
Well, you could. I lived in Vienna in 2016, and you definitely could.
Yeah, so. You can. You still can. That is something that was talked about. There was a big like referendum in 2017, I think it was. But people voted against it. And so you can
smoke a bars and talk bad about Alaba being in central midfield. That's
great country, right?
Do you have a place set that you're gonna watch the Austrian games here, like a bar here in Copenhagen, or what's your plan?
I think I'm gonna watch it in Stephanshus in Stephanskirche.
Yeah.
Because I've been there quite some times now.
Free advertising for them.
This goes out to you.
Yeah, actually, I shouldn't mention that because maybe people will listen to this podcast, but never mind. Yeah, no. it's a great place, and I got to know some people there. Like, also, I had the power of the remote control there at some place, so maybe I can have that again and switch to the Austrian games, because mm-hmm. I don't see the Danish people so interested in Austrian games, but I think if I ask kindly, then they will show the Austrian games.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. Have you ever played on the soccer pitch that's right next to Stefan's Huss?
Yes, yeah, I played against Nürburgr United.
Actually. Oh, because I'm always the guy standing like behind the fence watching people play because it looks so nice. And so far in our Volvox career that we had in Denmark, Alex and I here, we no, haven't been able to play there yet.
Pitches. Yeah,
not all yet. Right. So that's good to know.
All right, I have one final question that we've been asking all of our guests, and it's if you could have a beer or a coffee at Stefan's house, but other bars are available. With a past player or present of Austria, who would it be?
That's a great question. I was thinking about that, actually. And I would go for Christopher Trimmer from Union Berlin, mm-hmm. because he seems like a very humble yet very fun person. Yeah. And he lived quite a life, like playing in Vienna, playing in Berlin. I think he really chose the cities instead of the clubs. And now he's at Union Berlin, and I had the chance of going to the Union Berlin clubhouse as well because a friend of mine worked there, and he talked to me about like the great personalities in the team, and one was Christopher Trimmer, and the other one was the goalkeeper coach, which is Michael Gspurnik, another Austrian. Yeah. So I would go for Christopher Trimmer as the beer at Stefan's Huss.
Right. Sounds very good.
Sounds good. Thanks. Thanks so much for joining, Anton. It's been a pleasure. Wish Austria good luck in their group. I hope they get their win, at least.
Thank you very much. I hope so as well.
Yeah, best of luck.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Network.